They found him curled in the shower, his throat slit from ear to ear, 27 stab wounds scattered across his body, and a single bullet in his head. But this wasn't a random act of violence. This was personal, theatrical, and premeditated. Jodi Arias claimed it was self-defense. But the crime scene looked more like a horror film storyboard than a life-or-death struggle, and in a twist that would fuel headlines for years, she kept a camera rolling the entire time. Travis Alexander had been a rising star in the world of motivational speaking and Mormon purity, until he met a woman whose obsession blurred the line between devotion and destruction. Their relationship was toxic. Their breakup was explosive. And what happened in that bathroom became one of the most dissected murder trials of the decade. Was Jodi a battered woman, pushed to the edge, or a cold-blooded narcissist, obsessed with control? So, if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Lover, the Liar, and the Lens. To the world, Travis Victor. Alexander was the embodiment of redemption. Born into chaos, his childhood marred by drug-addicted parents, violence, and instability, he clawed his way out through faith, ambition, and charisma. By the time he was in his late 20s, he had transformed himself into a rising star at prepaid legal services, delivering high-energy motivational speeches and living as a devout Mormon in Mesa, Arizona. But beneath the clean-cut exterior, there was an inner war between spiritual discipline and earthly temptation. Jodi Ann Arias entered his life like a well-rehearsed fantasy. Blonde, seductive, and spiritually curious, she first met Travis at a business conference in Las Vegas in September 2006. The chemistry was immediate, the attraction mutual. He was intrigued by her beauty and attentiveness. She was drawn to his ambition, confidence, and the kind of lifestyle she wanted for herself. Within days, they were inseparable. Within months, they were sleeping together, a violation of his strict Mormon values. But that was only the beginning of a spiral neither of them could escape. Despite converting to Mormonism for Travis and attending church, Jodi quickly became more than just a girlfriend. She was invasive, manipulative, and increasingly unhinged. Friends of Travis grew uncomfortable. She hacked into his Facebook. She read his texts. She slashed his tires. She moved to Mesa to be near him after they broke up, uninvited. And in one of the most disturbing red flags, she would sneak into his home through the doggy door. Travis confided in friends that she scared him, calling her a sociopath. But he kept going back. Their sexual relationship was intense, secret, and in Travis's mind, shameful. They exchanged graphic texts and recorded sex calls. Jodi photographed herself in bondage poses and sent them to him regularly. They were addicted to each other in a way that felt more like self-destruction than romance. She gave him what he couldn't ask for in public. He gave her the illusion of permanence, and all the while she documented everything. Her camera, a Canon EOS, was like a weapon. It didn't just capture their sexual encounters, it bore silent witness to obsession in progress. On June 4, 2008, she brought that camera to Travis's house. They had sex. They took nude photographs of each other. She snapped pictures of him in the shower, vulnerable, unaware. At 5:29 p.m., the camera captured the final shot. Travis turned slightly, his eyes wide, his face half submerged in the stream. Seconds later, the attack began. She stabbed him 27 times. She slit his throat so violently that it nearly decapitated him. Then, for reasons no one fully understands, she shot him in the head. She tossed the camera in the washing machine, but technology kept the timeline alive. When Travis didn't show up for work or answer his phone, his friends broke into the house 5 days later. They found him curled in the bottom of his shower stall, bloated and bloodied. The scene was grotesque. There was blood on the walls, in the sink, smeared across the floor. Drag marks, a bloody handprint. And Jodi? She played innocent. She told police she hadn't seen Travis in months, then, caught by the camera metadata, she changed her story. Self-defense, she said. He attacked her after she dropped the camera. She ran. Then she fought back. But the forensics told another story. No signs of struggle. No defensive wounds on Travis. No injuries consistent with her version of events. And the sheer brutality of the attack. 27 stab wounds, throat slashed, a gunshot, suggested something far beyond survival. The public was obsessed. So was Nancy Grace. And the stage was set for one of the most sensational trials in American true crime history. Chapter 2. The Star Witness Was the Killer. The trial of Jodi Arias began in January 2013 and would drag on for months. Every day reporters lined the courthouse steps. The gallery was filled with rubberneckers and true crime hobbyists. Social media exploded. People weren't just interested. They were invested. At the center of it all was Jodi herself. Sitting at the defense table with oversized glasses and soft-spoken affect, she rebranded herself from femme fatale to frightened victim. She claimed Travis was controlling, emotionally abusive, and sexually deviant behind closed doors. She painted herself as the product of emotional trauma and manipulation. Her story changed again. Now she remembered everything. Every stab, every scream, every slash. But still, she insisted, it was self-defense. Then came the photos, the nude selfies, the sex tapes, the shower sequence, those haunting images taken just before Travis was butchered. It felt surreal, like watching a psychological thriller unfold in real time. But the most devastating witness wasn't a forensic expert or a friend. It was Jodi Arias. Her 18-day testimony stunned even seasoned courtroom veterans. She cried. She flirted. She argued with the prosecutor. She described their sex life in graphic detail, attempting to shift public perception from stalker to seduced victim. At times, she appeared vulnerable. At others, manipulative. Her ability to lie, then pivot to tears, became her trademark. Prosecutor Juan Martinez was relentless. He exposed contradiction after contradiction, dissecting her story until it collapsed under its own weight. He brought receipts, literally, from phone records, text messages, and that now infamous camera. His central argument was chilling. If Travis really attacked her, why did she clean the scene, delete the photos, and go on a road trip with her new lover the next day? The jury didn't buy the self-defense claim. On May 8, 2013, they found her guilty of first-degree murder. But even that didn't end it. The sentencing phase became a drama all its own. The jury couldn't reach a unanimous decision on the death penalty. A second sentencing trial also deadlocked. Finally, in April 2015, nearly 7 years after the murder, Jodi Arias was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Still, the circus never stopped. Jodi gave jailhouse interviews. She sold artwork online. Supporters and haters alike kept the story alive on forums, YouTube, and podcasts. The case had everything. Sex, religion, betrayal, revenge, all centered on a woman who looked one way and acted another. But the person who got lost in all the spectacle? Travis Alexander. He was more than a victim. He was a man trying to escape his past, build a future, and live up to his ideals, even when he failed to meet them. He was flawed, conflicted, and human. And in the end, he paid the price for trusting someone who viewed love as possession and rejection as war. This wasn't just a murder, it was a message from a woman who couldn't let go. So she carved herself into his story forever.